Good morning. Today's daf in Pesachim Mem Ches. We are in Mem Zayin Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud, and we are in a really fundamental discussion here in the third parak of Pesachim, and that is the topic of Hoel. Hoel is the question of whether or not we can look at the possibilities, even though they are not currently present and available to us, but at least it's possible. And do those possibilities going to affect and influence the halacha? So, notably, the Rav Chista Rabba dispute regarding Hoel surrounds the following. Let's say you cook on Yontif. You have every allowance to cook on Yontif for Yontif. But you cook on Yontif and you state very clearly that you're cooking on Yontif for the following day, which is a weekday. So that is a malacha. Are you going to get malchus for that? So machlokes between Rav Chista and Rabba. Rav Chista says you're going to get malchus. You're cooking on Yontif, but not for Yontif. So that's an iser of Yontif. And so therefore you're going to get malchus. And Rabba says, no, you're not going to get malchus. Now why? So Rabba subscribes to Hoel. This principle of Hoel tells us that, look, there is a possibility that guests are going to be coming today. And since that is somewhere within the realm of possibility, so therefore it's possible that this food is going to be consumed on Yontif. And even though you're stating, such a chiddush, even though you're stating that you're cooking for tomorrow, but since the possibility exists that guests are going to be coming today, so that means that the cooking could be for today, and therefore you're going to be relieved from malchus. That's the principle of Hoel. Okay, the application of Hoel, as we already pointed out, it seems to be somewhat limited. Meaning, Rabba's not telling us that it's okay to do so because of the principle of Hoel. The only thing that Rabba's doing is just simply excusing the individual, releasing the individual from malchus. But it doesn't say it's okay. So Hoel does seem to have somewhat of a limited application, right? I'd venture a guess that Rabba wouldn't say therefore it's okay. Meaning, yes, based on Rabba, right, the Gemara made this point already, but it's fair to reiterate. Yes, based on Rabba, so you can now cook from Yontif to Shabbos using the Erev Tefshilin, and as the Gemara was very clear, it's not the Erev Tefshilin, it's allowing you to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. What's allowing you to cook from Yontif for Shabbos, according to Rabba, is the principle of Hoel. But it's the Erev Tefshilin that's there to remind you that you can only do this from Yontif to Shabbos, but you cannot do this from a Yontif to a weekday. So, meaning, according to Rabba, from a regular Yontif to weekday, the only thing that Hoel is doing is getting you out of Malchus, but certainly not excusing the behavior. The behavior is still not allowed on a regular Yontif going into a weekday. Okay, nevertheless, overstanding that this is the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chista, whether we subscribe to Hoel or we don't subscribe to Hoel. Now, it's curious because how did we get here? So it's right, this has nothing to do with Pesachim, and it's not true, but it has very little to do with Pesachim. But nevertheless, we got here because of a Mishnah. You go back a couple days, the Mishnah, Mem Vav Amud Aleph, brought down a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua about what happens where you have dough, the dough is tameh, and you now want to make, you want to bake it, you want to make it into matzah. The problem is you have to be mafresh challah. There's no consumer of the challah. It's challah tameh. There's not going to be consumers. So what do you do under those circumstances? It's a dilemma. And you had a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua what you should do. Rabbi Elazar says you bake it first and then you and then you're mafresh challah after you bake it. And Rabbi Yeshua says, nah, it's fine. Just be mafresh the challah. It's gonna turn into chametz. Yeah, but you don't own it. The only Isra Balyura Balyamatse is only chametz that you own. You don't own this. And Rabbi Elazar, what is he gonna say about that? So what Rabbi Elazar is gonna say about it is that, yeah, but potentially it could be yours. Since potentially it could be yours, so therefore it's going to be a problem of Bali Rabba Yamatse. And what the Gemara suggested at the very beginning of the entire sugya, Mem Vav Amud Beis, is that what they're arguing about is whether or not we say Hoel or we don't say Hoel. Okay, so it's interesting that really we have this machlokes, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, as the Gemara presented as a topic of Hoel. We also have the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chissa as a topic of Hoel. Like, do the Amoraim know that the Tanaim are arguing about Hoel? Well, that's a really good question, and in fact, it's such a good question, we're going to be discussing that later this morning. Meaning, Rabbi and Rav Chista argue about Hoel. Is their machlokus of Hoel dependent on the machlokus of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua of the Mishnah? Or is it independent of their machlokus? So that's going to be a big part of today's discussion. So this is now going to be Daf Mem Ches. This is now going to be day three of the topic of Hoel. Okay, so obviously here in Pesachim, it's a really large sugya. And so let's continue where we left off yesterday. So we left off yesterday in the Gemara on Mem Zayin Amud Beis with the words Amarle. No, sorry, a little bit more than that. Amarle, yeah, yes, Amarle. Right words, I was in the wrong spot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Continuing in the Gemara. Wait 1 second, didn't you say? Question was posed to Rav Chista, Vamila by me name Rav Huna. Some say it came from Rav Huna. Whoever the question was asked to, the following was asked, Hey, Visa May Afar or Afer. Let's say a sheep was brought from the Afer. It was brought from the swamp. Rashi over here says Achu. Right? You're familiar with that term. It comes up in the Chumash with Pyro in the dreams. So anyway, so a sheep came from the swamp. Vishachtu Tamid Biyamtov Mahu. And we shecht as the carbon Tamid An Yantav. What would be the halacha? Shachtu Tamid Mahu. So Rashi over here says that it's an Ola Shel Sibor, basically the carbon Sibor, a carbon Ola of a carbon Sibor. It's a communal Ola offering. Okay, that's the way Rashi understands it. It's going to get a little bit tricky as we go through the discussion. That's what we're talking about. Anyway, but we're going to stay on path. We're going to stay with Rashi. Anyway, what's the problem over here? The problem over here is that you didn't do a bikur, you didn't do any kind of investigation, you just got it right out of the swamp. Would I be able to offer it as a carbon on yontif? So, the atamartlan, now you told us the following Allah. On that question, you cited the following. Now, what is the following? So Rashi says it's a drasha. We are darshaning over here, psukim in Sefer Yecheskel. Now, Sefer Yecheskel is not going to be the source of Allah, it's going to be Chumash, which is the source of halacha, but this happens in the Gemara every now and then, that when we darshing psukim and navi, so what we're going to have to say is that either it's an asmachta or it's gilui milsa. Whatever the case is, we're darshing a pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel, and this is Perek Mem Zayin. The drasha goes like as follows. The pasuk reads in total, right? If you want to see the pasuk without the drushes, you could drop down to Rashi. Rashi is four lines down after the lines get wide. So it's a brisa. Rashi says it's drushing a pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel. I'm sorry, Perek Mem Hey. Gabi Karbanos. The pasuk reads as follows: V'se'achas minatzon minamasayim mimashke Yisrael. So it's a sheep. It's one sheep. One in 200 mimashke Yisrael. Something that was consumed by the Jewish people, literally drunk by the Jewish people. Okay? And now we go back to the Gemara and we're going to dash in the pasuk word by word. So set. So v'lo bechor, so it has to be set, not bechor. Meaning that what you're offering as a carbon has to be a standard sheep and it cannot be a bechor. Now Rashi over here writes the problem with bechor is that bechor comes from a zachar and we're looking for something that could be zachar in a keva. And that makes the previous Rashi a little bit tricky, because the previous Rashi says that we're talking about a carbonola. Carbonola can only come from male, not from female. So over here, it's hard, difficult to understand what sevelo bechor, it has to be the sheep and not the bechor. And Rashi says, well, you know, the bechor is a male, and we're looking for male or female. Well, that's not true. Since it's an ola, we're only looking for a male. Okay, so, and I'm not really breaking any ground over here. Tosus is already bothered by this. Anyway, we continue. Sevelo bechor. Achas velo meiser. So, and it has to be one, and it cannot be meiser. Now, meiser, we're talking about meiser behema, talking about an animal. So meiser over here, Rashi says that the drasha is predicated on the fact that when you have meiser behema, so by definition, you need 10. You're not going to get to meiser behema without first having 10. Okay, so you have 10 animals over there, and you count, and the 10th animal is going to be meiser behema. So by virtue that the pasuk in Yecheskel says achas, it means that this animal is being procured from one singular animal. Now, minatzon v'lo apagas. Tzon tells me that it has to be of a certain age, can't be pagas. Pagas is animal adolescence. Okay? When the sheep is young, it's called tzon. When it's older, it's called an ayil. And there's an in-between stage at 13 months. Right? The time that it goes from immaturity to maturity is from 1 year to 2 year. Right? When it's within its first year of its life. So that's a son. When it's in the second year of the life, that's already an ayil. So, more accurately, it's kevis within the first year. An ayil in the second year. Anyway, the point is that during that 13th month, so it's in between. And halacha describes it as being a pagus. So so that's no good over here. Meaning that the pagus is because its status now is no longer kevis. So therefore, it doesn't qualify. Amin hamasayim. Continuing in the Gemara, we're in Mem Ches Amud Aleph. Now over here describing Min HaMasayim. So what does that mean, Mimosa? Shtei Meoshin Ishtaru Bebor. It has to be where it was gotten from a pit, 1 in 200. Now that's a reference to the wine, meaning what happened over here in the Braisa, and the Braisa did it seamlessly without telling us, is that it transitioned from talking about the animals that are going to be eligible for a carbon, and now it's going to be talking about the wine, which means that we're talking about the Nesachim. And therefore, when it comes to the Nesachim have to be Isser free. There cannot be any Yisurim in the Nesachim. And so therefore, let's say, for example, it was mixed in with a little bit of Arla. So you need Bittul. How much you need for Bittul for Arla? 1 in 200. This is the largest ratio for Bittul. When it comes to Truma, it's 1 in 100. When it comes to Arla, it's 1 in 200. Remember, there was an earlier Rashi here in the Masechta, really interesting Rashi. How do we get there, the 1 in 200? So Rashi said, well, it's predicated on the fact that when for Bittul for Truma is 1 in 100, and Truma is Asur Ba'Achila, well, Arla is Asur Ba'Achila Uvehana'a, so that is a factor of 2 times Isser, and so therefore the Bittul ratio is going to be 2 times greater. So instead of 1 to 100, it's going to be 1 to 200. That was a Rashi. Rashi over there, he was quoting a Sifra, I think. Anyway. So that means that the ratio of Bittul for Arla is going to be 1 in 200. So when I have this wine that experiences kind of Bittul, that's good. But if it didn't experience this Bittul, so that means that it's a Tarovis of Isser, and therefore you can't use it for Nesachim. Mimashke Yisrael minamuta liYisrael, and Mimashke Yisrael, which means something which we ourselves are allowed to drink, meaning the only thing that can qualify as Nesachim is only that it's only something that we ourselves are allowed to drink. Mikan Amru, Ein Mevi Nesachim min HaTevel. So one is not allowed to bring Nesachim from Tevel. Since the wine is Chayv and Shumas HaMaisos, and Shumas HaMaisos were not taken off, so it has the status of Tevel, which means that it's Aser, and you cannot use it as Nesachim. Yachalo Yavi min HaMuksa. Now I might have thought that I cannot bring it from Muksa. Muksa over here in this context means that it wasn't set aside. Amart ma'tevel miyuchad she'isr gufo garam lo, av kol she'isr gufo garam lo yatsa Muksa, shein isr gufo garam lo, ala isr davar acher garam lo. And to which the Gemara says that that you can't compare an isr migufo versus an isr that is external. Something where the Isser is Migufo, like say, for example, Tevel. Tevel's an Isser Migufo, right? There's something intrinsically, inherently wrong with it in terms of an Isser. You didn't take off Trumas and Maestros, so the Isser is in it, and that's why you can't use it. But when it comes to Muksa, let's say, for example, it's an animal that was not set aside for Shabbos. It was not set aside for Yontif. In the context of the drasha, we're talking about Shabbos, but the question was with Yontif, but either way, the point is still the same. In other words, it was an animal that was not set aside, and therefore has a muksa status, but muksa is an external issue. Internally, there is nothing wrong with the animal per se. The isser is not inherent in the animal. The isser is a function of the fact that it's something which is external. And therefore, there is nothing inherently wrong with the animal, and therefore it could be used as a carbon. This brings us all to answer the question that was asked. You find an animal in the swamp on Yontif, and you want to bring it as a carbon in the base of Mikdash. And again, Rashi says it's an Ola Shel Tzibur. Whatever the case is, you want to bring it a carbon. Now, the consideration, now we understand a lot better what the issue was to begin with. The consideration was that it is an animal of Muksa, therefore you can't bring it. And to which the Gemara's response is, no, that's not a problem. Because Muksa in this context is not going to disqualify a carbon. Muksa is something external, not something internal. An internal isser, like Tevel, that'll create a problem. An external issue, like Muksa, is not going to create a problem. Good. Now, all this brings us fully around to make one singular point, right? It was a long pathway to get to a singular point, but here we are. Iyamar disa Muksa daraisa. Now remember what you suggested. You suggested that the isser of Muksa is daraisa. Now let's go back for a moment in order to appreciate what the Gemara here is responding to. Remember, the Gemara was attacking Rabbah. Rabbah was being attacked by Abaye, one of his Talmidim, and he attacked him from a Mishnah. Mishnah Makos describes where a person is going to be cooking and eating a Gid Anasha, and he's going to be subject to 5 separate sets of Malkus. So how do we get there? So let's quickly review. The Braisa describes a scenario in which, if you go back to yesterday's daf, right, you don't have to turn back the page, it's on the same page, the Amud Beis of yesterday. So a person can be cooking and eating Gid HaNasha that's cooked with Ginnasha cooked with chalav, sorry. Ginnasha cooked with milk on Yantav, and you eat it, you're going to get some five sets of malchus. What they are the following. Number one, you're cooking the Ginnasha on Yantav. Now, the Ginnasha is not consumable. Cooking it, therefore, is not allowed. That's malchus number one. Malchus number two, you're going to get malchus for eating the Ginnasha. Malchus number three, you're cooking meat and milk together. The Ginnasha is halachically deemed as meat. So cooking it together with milk is a Isra Bishol Basa Bachalav. That was number three. Number four, Lokim Mishim Ocha Basa Bachalav. You ate it together. And then finally, Malchus number five is Lokim Mishim Havara. You made a fire in order to cook it. And therefore, you're going to get Malchus for the fire. And the question was posed directly at Rabbah. Rabbah, you said that Hol is going to relieve you from Malchus. So here you made a fire. Now, I know you made the fire for this particular dish. But here's what could happen. After cooking this, we could use the fire for something which we're allowed to cook on Yantav. Isn't Hol going to excuse Malchus for number five, for Malchus number five? That was the question that was posed at Rabbah. It's a strong question. Now, Rabbah's answer was, we're going to have to edit. We're going to take out Havara and we're going to replace it. Now, we know the number is five, so we have to replace it with something because there's five sets of Malchus, and that is a non-negotiable point. So therefore, what did he replace it with? He replaced it with wood, which is muksa. Wood, which is muksa, according to Rabbah, that's an Issa d'Oraisa. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Beis, the Gemara in Shabbos says that muksa is d'Rabbanan, but the Gemara over here is entertaining the idea that muksa is d'Oraisa and links it with the position of Rabbah. Rabbah, we're going to see in the beginning of Masech Beitza, Rabbah holds that there's this idea of hachana, and if I don't prepare something for Shabbos, it therefore is muksa, therefore it's going to be Asr, and Rabbah has a drasha, and therefore it's an Issa d'Oraisa. And now, what the Gemara is saying is, in this defense of Rabbah that we gave in yesterday's daf, now it falls apart. Because what we just learned together is that if, in fact, Muksa was a din d'Oraisa, as much as the Karban is going to be disqualified because of an Isser Shabo, like Tevel, for example, right, we're talking about Nesachim, but still the same point. So therefore, if Muksa is a din d'Oraisa, it should also be disqualified for Muksa as well. It's not disqualified from muksa. So what is it? What does it show us? It shows us that muksa is not d'oraisa. Muksa is a din d'rabbanan, and therefore the substitution where you're taking out havara and you're replacing it with muksa, it's not a good substitution because muksa is a din d'rabbanan. You're not going to get malchus for muksa. Okay. So Ella. So the Gemara says fine. So here's now what we're going to do. We're still now on the path of defending Rabbah. And what we're going to have to do now is we're going to have to find the replacement. We took out Havara from the Mishnah. We're replacing it now with Ela Apik Havara V'ayelatze Hekdesh. So we're going to replace it with a wood of Hekdesh. I did skip, didn't I? Yes, I did. E Amart. I'm going to go back now to the first wide line. E Amart Issa Muksa D'Oraisa Mali Issa Gufa Mali Issa Davar Acher. Good. V'od. And furthermore. Good. Okay. Baruch Hashem. I'm back. V'od ha at hu da amar. Didn't you say chiluk melachos l'Shabbos vein chiluk melachos l'Yantov? And on top of that, look, when it comes to Shabbos, so for every separate melacha that you violate, you're going to be receiving separate onshim for every melacha. So this is the idea of chiluk melachos. We discussed it extensively in the seventh parak of Shabbos. So that's true. On Yantov, however, you do not have this phenomena. This idea of chiluk melachos does not apply on Yantav. So therefore, if we're talking now about separate melachos for Yantav, you do not get separate onshim. It's one onish, even though it's separate melachos for every one of the melachos that you violate for Yantav. So here's what we're going to have to do now. Ella apik havara va'ayel atzei ashera. So what we're going to do is we're going to take out havara from the list of five. We have to do that in order to defend Rabbah, and we're going to replace it with Atzei Asherah, wood of the Asherah tree. Asherah tree is an Avodah Zarah tree. We discussed it back in Avodah Zarah in detail, and the halacha is that you're not allowed to get hana from that wood. Now, V'azara Ma'acha, now you are using that wood for your fuel, so how do I know that that's Asher and subject to Malchus? The Pasuk says, Lo Yidbak B'yarcham U'ma Menacherim. You're not allowed to have any part of Avodah Zarah. Good. So Amalei Rav Acha Breda Rav Alabai Vinokin Ami Mishum Velo Savi Soei Val Beisecha. The Gemara says that here we have a technical problem. And that is that if you're trying to introduce over here Atzei Hashera, do you know how many sets of Malkus you get for Atzei Hashera? The answer is two, not one. So therefore, the substitution would have been good, but for the technical issue that for Atzei Hashera you get two sets of Malkus, not one set of Malkus, so now we lost on the number five. Now it's no longer five, it's six. And again, the assumption is that five is a non-negotiable point. So Ella's of the Gemara says, okay, so here's what we're going to do. Apik Avar v'ayel Atzei Hekdesh. So the Gemara says, we're going to take out Avar, we're going to replace it with Atzei Hekdesh, the wood of Hekdesh. V'azar me'acha v'ashrayim t'srifun be'esh lo sasun k'in l'ashem elokeichem. When you have something belonging to Hekdesh, the idea that you are not allowed to destroy it, burn it. So we learn from this pasuk over here, lo sasun k'in l'ashem elokeichem. So we know it's a lav when you take Atzei Asherah, sorry, when you take Atzei Hekdesh and you burn it for your own personal use. Therefore, what comes out over here is that we have now defended Rabbah. Rabbah says that we have the principle of Howel. Howel says we look at the possibilities. If one of the possibilities is relieving you from Malkus, you're not going to get Malkus. So now in that Mishnah of Malkus that talks about cooking the Gittah Nusha together with milk, and you're going to get five sets of Malkus, so starting the fire cannot be one of the sets of Malkus. Can't be. Because according to Rabbah, you're not going to get Malkus for starting a fire. Because although you're using the fire to cook the Gittah Nusha, but you could also use the same fire for something which is mutter. So therefore, you're not going to get Malkus for starting the fire. What are you going to get Malkus for? What's Malkus number five? So after a really lengthy discussion, the Gemara now has finally concluded that what we're going to do is we're going to substitute it with Atzei Hekdesh, the wood of Hekdesh, where by burning it, you're going to be subject to the Malkus of Lo Sasun Kein, Lashem Elokechem. Okay, period. Okay, that ends our first part of today's daf in terms of a defense, mounting a defense for a Rabbah. Okay, step number two in today's daf, part number two, and that is the following. I already foreshadowed this discussion earlier this morning, and that is we have a machlokes between Rabbah and Rav Chisda on the issue of Howel. Do we subscribe to Howel? Do we not subscribe to Howel? Next thing the Gemara wonders is, is this machlokes Rabbah and Rav Chisda? Are they recognizing at all that this is also a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua on the principle of Howel? Now, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah do not utter the words Howel. They just simply debate what to do with our dough in which it's Tamea, and we want to now be Mafrish Chala. We have to be Mafrish Chala. And what are we going to do? If we're Mafrish Chala and we bake the Chala, so now that baking is unnecessary. Because since it's Tamei, Cohen can't eat it, you're not allowed to bake it. Anyantiv. Well, what am I going to do? Am I going to be Mafrish the Chala and just leave the Chala to rise? Well, then it's going to become Chametz, and it's Pesach, and that's going to be an Isser. So what do I do? So Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer debate. Rabbi Elazar says, here's what you're going to do. You are first going to bake all that dough. Don't be mafrish chala. You're going to bake all that dough. And then afterwards, after you bake it, then korelas Hashem. Then you're mafrish chala. And because now it's baked, it's not going to turn into chametz. Now, why does Rabbi Elazar say that? Because potentially all this dough can become yours, right? Obviously, chala will be taken off. But while you're baking it, all that dough can be yours. And Rabbi Elazar is predicated on the principle of Howel. And that's why you have to bake it first. And Rabbi Yoshua's response is, what Howel are you talking about? There's no Howel over here. He doesn't subscribe to Howel altogether. And therefore, you're mafrish the challah. You're not allowed to bake it. Fine, you're not allowed to bake it. It's going to become chametz. Yeah, but the Torah doesn't prohibit bal yirah bal yimatzeh on dough that does not belong to you. This challah does not belong to you. And because you haven't given to a kohen yet, it doesn't belong to a kohen. Good. That's the explanation we gave on that Mishnah. The truth of the matter is, the Gemara tried to give another explanation, Tova Sana, but the Gemara aborted that explanation, and the Gemara went to this explanation of Howel. And now, here comes the Gemara's question. Rabbi and Rav Chisda are arguing about Howel. Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer are arguing about Howel. Are these two machloksim tied one to the other? Amar Rami Barchama. So here we go now with our second part of today's daf, and this is now going to be the next discussion. So Rami Bar Chama says very simply, connected, these two machloksim are tied together. The Rabbi Elazar suffer, Amin and Hol. Rabbi Elazar says, you subscribe to Hol, Rabbi Yeshua suffer, Lo Amin and Hol. So now we're basically going to have Rabbi tied to Rabbi Eliezer, and we're going to have Rav Chisda tied to Rabbi Yeshua. So Amr Rav Papa Vidilma Adkan. Now Rav Papa says, you don't have to say that. meaning that what we could do is that we can give a nuanced discussion of Hoel, and what we could do is that we could separate the two Hoels, the Hoel of Rabbi Eliezer and the Hoel of Rabbah. How are we going to separate them? So our Papa says, I'll tell you how. V'dilma ad kan lo kama Rebbe Lazar hasim damrin en Hoel ela debi'ina deka ayala tanura kol chad v'chad v'chazi leili didei. You see, in the case of the dough, so what happens when you bake the dough? When you bake the dough, so if I look at each dough in of itself, I'm able to say the following. I could potentially be the consumer of that dough, meaning yes, of course, we're going to be separating challah. But we haven't determined which one yet, and possibly, every single dough, as I'm putting in the oven, could be something that I'm eating. That's the kind of hoel that Rabbi Elazar says I'm in on. But over here, what kind of hoel we're talking about? The hoel of maybe guests are going to come. That has nothing to do with me. That has to do with something which is external. Guests are going to come. Hoel does not entertain the possibilities of having outside help and outside influence. Hoel is only going to be a concept, according to Rabbi Eliezer, when what the possibilities are going to be dependent on me, not something external. So that's how we could say that Rabbi Eliezer may not subscribe to the Hoel of Rabbah. Rabbah's Hoel is a further stretch of the imagination, and maybe Rabbi Eliezer doesn't subscribe to that. I'm Rav Shisha Breder of Edi V'dim Alohi, Adkan Lokama Rabbi Yeshua Asam, Delor Minan Hoel. And here now we could say the following. Rabbi Yeshua's rejection of Hoel as it relates to the dough on Pesach is Ela De'ika Chada De'lo Chazilei. It could be that Rabbi Yeshua rejects Hoel in the case of the dough, because look, when all said and done, there is going to be a piece taken off and being separated as challah. Regardless of which dough it's coming out of, it's going to come out of one of the doughs. We know definitively that there is going to be something there that is challah. And so therefore, I can't look at the possibilities. Every time I put dough in, I'm going to say, yeah, not this one, not this one. Eventually, it's not true. One of them is going to be mufresh l'challah. But over here, look, guests can come on Yontov, and every piece of food that I cooked on Yontov, even though I said I'm cooking it for the next day, for a weekday, but every piece of that food can be consumed by guests. Hoel over there is going to cover everything that I'm cooking. So it could be that Rabbi Yeshua, who dismisses Hoel in the case of the challah, maybe over here would subscribe to Hoel. Okay, Amru Rabban Kamei de Rabbi Yirmiyah, V'Rav Zera, Rabbi Yirmiyah Kabla, Rabbi Zera Lo Kibla. Okay, so now we are in the middle of this discussion as to whether or not this machlokus, Rabban Rav Chista of Hoel, is it the same machlokus of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua? So some Amoraim bought on this idea, and some Amoraim did not buy on the idea. Rabbi Yirmiyah bought into it, meaning Rabbi Yirmiyah was selling what Rami Bar Chama was. I'm sorry, Rabbi Yirmiyah was buying what Rami Bar Chama was selling, and Rabbi Zera said, "Nah, I'm not buying it." Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Zera Milsa de Kashulan. Look, Rabbi Yirmiyah says to Rabbi Zera, you know, this has been a discussion for years, meaning they have the Mishnah, obviously, of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. They didn't know how to explain the Machlokas. They knew the Machlokas, but they didn't know how to explain it. And finally, after years of studying that Mishnah, now finally someone comes along and says, oh, you know what they're arguing about? They're arguing a principle of Hoel. Now, Hashemur Mishmei Degavah Rabbah, Veloni Kable. And we're hearing it, and we're not just hearing it, but we're hearing it from a great person. And you're not ready to accept it? You should accept it. Amalei Hecha Kable. So Rabbi Zera says, I'm not ready to accept it. Meaning, look, consider the following. The Tanina we learned in the following Brisa. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua Lidvarecha, Hari Over Mishum Lo Sasek Homalacha, Vishasik Lei. How in the world are you cooking this dough on Yantiv? You are violating the Isser of Lo Sasek Homalacha. Torah says that you're not allowed to do Malacha on Yantiv. And yes, you're allowed to cook on Yantiv, but if there's a consumer, but if you're cooking something on Yantiv where no one's allowed to consume it, here you're baking challah tameah, nobody can consume it. That's a malacha on Yantiv. How can you do that? And there was no response. The Iisa lemalei tamadidi mishum hawal. Now in that brisa, there's dialogue between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua says, "How can you cook something? How can you bake something where there's no consumer?" And we didn't hear Rabbi Eliezer respond, oh, because I subscribe to Hoel. Why didn't he say that? You're telling me they're arguing about Hoel. Meanwhile, in a braisa, when we have dialogue, we don't hear Rabbi Eliezer talking about Howell. So I'm a label the tamechu the tanina bebraisa. So the response is, just because it's not mentioned in the braisa, that's not sufficient evidence. Consider the following braisa. Now Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Eliezer, sorry, other way around. Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Yeshua, if we don't bake it, it's going to turn into chametz, and the owner of that dough is now in violation of Bayra Bayamatse. And in that braisa, there was no response. Now what do you mean there's no response? We know what the response is. We saw it in our Mishnah. Well, there's no, we don't have to guess. Rabbi Yoshua's response is very clear. The Torah doesn't prohibit this kind of chametz, because this kind of chametz is not owned by anybody. It's not owned by the owner, because once he's mafresh challah, it no longer belongs to him, and it doesn't belong to a kohen, because no kohen has been the recipient of it. So therefore, it is a chametz without an owner. Chametz without an owner is not subject to Bayir Abay Yamatse. So in the Braisa there is no response, but we know what the response is. Ella, Shasik Lebe Braisa, Mahadale Bemasnisan, Hachinami, Emer Shasik Bemasnisa, Vahadale Bemosa, Bemechilt Achrita. Just because we don't see the full dialogue in the Braisa doesn't mean that there was more dialogue. There was more dialogue. It just happens to be that we don't have the Braisa's bringing down the full back and forth between the Tanayim. So in the absence of an explanation that's given in the Braisa, don't say, you see you're wrong. No, we just simply don't have all the dialogue between the two. But now that we are adding the dialogue, and the dialogue that we're adding is that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the reason why baking it would be okay is because of the principle of Howel. Okay, so now we're going to insert that dialogue, and now we have a really good explanation for Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, so Ad Kan. Well, actually, just a little bit more. Tanya Rebbe Omer Halachik Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Yitzchak Omer Halachik Ben Beseira. And so the Gemara over here now concludes in terms of what the halacha is, meaning in the scenario in which you have the dough, which is tamei, and now you want to bake it on Yantav. What are you going to do regarding the challah? So we have a very basic debate between Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yoshua. Rebbe Eliezer says first bake it and then be mafresh the challah. And Rabbi Yoshua says, no, don't do that. First be mafresh the challah and then bake it. And what do you do with the challah? You let it become chametz. You're letting it become chametz? Yeah, because it's ownerless. So where do we stand in terms of the halacha? So it's a machlokus of the later Tanayim. Rabbi says halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yitzchak says halacha is like Ben Becerra. That doesn't help us in terms of giving us a conclusion, meaning it's a machlokus in terms of who we follow on the machlokus of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. It gets complicated in terms of what the halacha is. So the complication is predicated on the fact that, generally speaking, when we have a machlokas between Rebbe and any other Tana, so we follow like Rebbe. So over here, you would say the halacha follows like Rebbe and not like Rebbe Yitzchak. That's what you would say, and therefore the halacha should be like Rebbe Eliezer. That would seem to be the fair conclusion in terms of where we should go in the halacha. So on the machlok is between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, so we should go like Rabbi Eliezer. First you should bake everything, and then you should be mafresh the challah. That's what it sounds like. Tosfos says it's not that clear. Tosfos says right over here, it's the only Tosfos on the Amud. So Tosfos says over here that yes, it's true, it's a machlok between Rebbe and a contemporary of his, but it's also true that we have a machlok between Rab and Rav Chista. And remember, a good part of the Amud was linking the two machloksim together. Now, debatable whether they're linked together or not, but according to a good number of Amoraim, Rami Bar Chama, right, and another Amoraim, the two are linked together. So it's not just a machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, it's also a machlokus between Rab and Rav Chista. So the whole matter becomes complicated, and so Tosa says, normally I tell you that the halacha falls like Rabbi, but over here in this particular case, the halacha may not go like Rabbi. So, like I said, complicated in terms of where the Gemara lands on all this, but okay, that's the end of the discussion. Kama Shi'ur Isa. We are now starting a new topic in today's daf, and that is as follows. You're gonna bake your matzah on Pesach, right? None of us bake our matzah on Pesach, right? We wouldn't dream of it. But you're gonna bake your matzah on Pesach. You want to work with a manageable amount of dough. You want to make sure that the dough you're working with is not going to rise and not going to become chametz. So you're going to use dough in smaller increments. And so the discussion we're going to be having now for a good part of today's daf is, what is that smaller increment of dough? How much dough should you use where it's going to be manageable and it's not going to turn into chametz? So the Kamashir Isa. It's funny. The Gemara launches us into this discussion without much of a introduction. Okay. Anyway, Kamashir Isa, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, Omer Bechitin Kavin uvisaorin Shlosha Kavin. So here now the Tanaim offer their opinions in terms of how much. The Gemara over here describes it just in terms of wheat and barley, right? There are three other grains that could be used for making matzah, but for whatever reason, the Tanaim are only working with wheat and barley. Could be, if you go back to the Gemara Lama test, it could be that the other grains are really subcategories within wheat and barley. Okay, maybe. But anyway, so according to Rav Yochanan ben Brocha, for wheat it's going to be a kavan. For saor it's going to be three kavan. So Rabbi Nasan, Omer Mishum, Rabbi Lazar Chiluf Hadvarim, and he says, flip it around. Okay, good. V'atayin, we learned on the Brisa, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, Omer, Bechitin Shlosha Kabin, V'sarin Arba Kabin. Now here's the problem. We have a Brisa that espouses the viewpoint of Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, and he does not say what we learned in the previous Brisa. He says that when it comes to wheat, it's three Kabin. When it comes to barley, it's going to be four Kabin. So those numbers are off from the previous Brisa. So the Gemara says, Lokasha habe chasichta habe malyasa. It depends on the quality of the kernel that we're talking about. If we're talking about chasichta, that's the inferior quality, so then you're going to be starting off with wheat 3 and with barley 4. If you're working with better quality wheat, so then better quality grain, then for wheat it's going to be 2, and then for barley it's going to be 3. Amar Rapapa. Rapapa says, look, I'll make a commercial point out of all this, right? The Rapapa was our resident brewer, right? He made all the beers. So he says, look, let's make a point regarding Mekach u'Memkar. And that is Shmamina, Garin Chitin Chasichta, Mechita Malyasa, Tfemi, De Garin Sa'ari Chasichta, Mesare Malyasa, De Elohasam, Tilsav Achariva. Look at what happens when you buy wheat in the inferior state. So wheat depreciates, meaning when you buy wheat of inferior state, so it's 3, right? I'm just going over the ratios right now. 3 inferior is really equivalent to 2 of superior. Now, as it relates to barley, 4 of the inferior is equivalent to 3. So when you're talking about wheat and you're buying the better quality wheat, so really what happens now is that basically it diminishes a full third, going from 3 to 2. As it relates to barley, on the other hand, so it diminishes only a quarter, going from the inferior to the superior. Okay, so basically when you're putting in your purchase orders, so make sure that for wheat you get the better quality. Otherwise, you're going to need a third more of the inferior quality. Okay, good. So Rav Papa is just thinking business as it relates to the Gemara. Amar Rav. Okay, Gemara is still on this topic in terms of how much grain should you use in order to make sure that the dough you're making on Yontif doesn't turn into chametz. So Amar Rav, kaba milugna lepischa v'chein lechala. So when you are working with a kav, that's a good amount. Not any kav, but kav from the town of Lugna. Okay, I don't know geographically what we're talking about. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so the kav is a good amount of wheat that you should be working with on Pesach in order to ensure that it doesn't become chametz. And also for the mitzvah of afreshes challah. So we all know that when working with dough, so if you have a shear of dough, so you're mafresh challah. So the Gemara is telling us that when you have this kav from Lugna, so it satisfies two halachas. One, the amount of manageable dough to make sure that doesn't become chametz. And number two, the halacha regarding a kav of how much to be mafish for challah. So the Gemara says, on that second point, aren't you wrong? V'hatzanan, right? We learned in the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah tells us, the Mishnah in challah. So we're now on the top of the Amud Beis. Chameshes, Revayim, Kemach, V'od, Chayvam, V'challah. So how much do you need in order to be mafresh challah? So the Mishnah tells us very clearly that it's a kav and a quarter, right? The Gemara describes it over here as 5/4. But it's a kav and a quarter. So what are you telling me that one kav is the amount you need for challah? It's not true. It's a kav and a quarter. So hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, kava milugnai nami ahai shirakai. So the Gemara says, okay, so let me translate. The kav of Lugna, so their measurements are weird. Okay, it's a different place. It's, you know, they have different customs. Their kav happens to be equivalent to a kav and a quarter. Okay, I'm going to spare all of us from Rashi over here, where Rashi gets to the idea that the amount of challah you need, the amount of dough you need in order to be mafresh challah is going to be a kav and a quarter. How do we get to that number? So Rashi spends a good amount of time over here going through how we get there. And I'll spare everybody the mouth for today. On another occasion, we've got so much Gemara ahead of us. On another occasion, so I know we've done it. We'll do it again in the future. Mirtz Hashem, good. We'll give ourselves a pass on that. Am Rav Yosef Hanin Nishay Didan Nagla Meifa Kapisa Kapisa Lepischa. So Rav Yosef says, let me tell you the minhag of our women. So when they make their dough on Pesach, so they make sure to use small batches of dough. Kapiza, kapiza. Kapiza is three lugin. So they make real small batches of dough to make sure that it doesn't become chametz. So Amalei Abai is not impressed. So my daitech lechomra, your women are so machmir. So Abai says to Rav Yosef, I'm not excited by that chomra. Chomra dasi le dekulahu, deka mafkile mechala. Yeah, by using such small amounts of dough, so it's true that now on the side of it not becoming chametz, so that's great. So they're machmir. But now they're missing out on the mitzvah of hafrashas challah because they're not using the requisite amount of dough in order to make challah. So on the chametz side they're being machmir. But now you're missing out on the mitzvah of challah. So Abaye says I'm not impressed. Amar lei da'avdan k'Rebbe Eliezer. So Rav Yosef says to Abaye, we're not missing out on the mitzvah of challah. Here's what's happening. So we're making matzah with those small batches of dough. And then what do? Then after the matzah has been made, we put all the matzahs together in a basket, and then the kli is going to be mitzaref. It will combine all those doughs to get to the requisite shear. So once again, here comes another Mishnah and Challah, Ditnan. So we learned in this Braisa, Mishnah really. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Haroda Menosel Asal Asal Mitzaref and Challah. So here the Mishnah tells us very clearly that even after you bake your Challah, right? I'm using the word challah over here colloquially, right? I mean the dough. When you take your dough and you bake it, and now you have bread, and you haven't separated challah yet, you could put it in a basket, and the basket will be mitzaref. And that's the halacha. Halacha is that you could be mitzaref. And in fact, halacha lamaisa, right? You made your bread, right? I'll speak colloquially. You made your challah, and you forgot to be mafresh challah. So what do? It's not too late. So after everything is baked, you put it in a basket. The basket's going to be mitzaref, and now you'll be mafresh l'challah. So Amar Levi Ha'itmar L'Amar Rav Yeshua Ben Levi Lo Shanu Ela Kikar Shabavel Shenoshcho Zumizu. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. I thought that halacha of tziruf only is talking about where the bread is baked in an oven in a manner where the bread's touching one another, right? In all my experience of baking challah, which is, of course, everyone here knows. But nevertheless, you know that when you bake bread in the oven, it's close together, so they touch one another. I thought tziruf works only in that situation. Aval ke'ach and lo. But if you're baking the bread in the oven and they're not touching one another, I didn't think you could use tziruf. So the Gemara says, Hayit malam, Rabbi Chanina, afilo ke'achin. So it says, good. So let me inform you. You can use tziruf even if they're baked separately, one from the other. But Rav Yirmiyah Tavla Shein Lo Lav Vazvazin Mahu. Rav Yirmiyah says, okay, so this idea of tziruf, good. So we just learned together that even after you bake the bread, you could still be mafresh challah by putting it all together. Let's say you put it in a tray, and the tray doesn't have a lip to it. So Rav Yirmiyah wants to know, is that going to work? So toch kli beinan v'haleka. So does it have to have a toch? Does it have an interior? And this tray, under discussion, is just totally flat. O dilma avir kli beinan v'haika. Or maybe no, the tray is good. In other words, you can envision the airspace over the kli, teku. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Elazar Omer Asal Mitzarfon, Rabbi Shua Omer Tanar Mitzarfon. So here in the Braisa, so Rabbi Elazar says that the basket's going to be Mitzarf, Rabbi Yeshua says an oven's going to be Mitzarf. Now it could be that Rabbi Yeshua means even an oven is going to be Mitzarf. You can see Rashi over here, that's the way he understands it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Kikar Shobavel, Shenosh Chazum Azum Mitzarfos. The breads of Bavel, they are literally biting one another, like we described earlier, and therefore they're going to be mitzaref. Good, the Bryce over here talks more about this idea of tziruf. Okay, so when baking your matzah on Pesach, again, none of us do this, but when baking your matzah on Pesach, so basically what we just went through together in the Gemara is that it has to be a manageable amount, because if it's too large an amount, so then there's a real chshash of chimutz, and so therefore make sure to use manageable amounts. And what the Gemara did is just simply the intersection of this discussion of this concern of chimutz and also the requirement of being mafresh challah. We have two more sugyas to go through this morning. Rabbi Gamliel Omer Shalosh Nashim Lashos Ka'acha. So you can have three women working the dough. And the Ofos Betanur Echad Zu Acher Zu. And even though now they're waiting in line for the oven, that's okay. So according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, it's Ramingam Leo. So basically now you can have your three women baking the matzah, and even though the two of them are going to be waiting for the oven, that's going to be fine. Now, Chachamim Amrin Shalosh Nashim Moskos Bebatik Achas. Achas Lashav Achas Orchav Achas Ofa. Now, the Chachamim say, no, don't have anybody waiting in line. Because you can imagine, the woman waiting in line, especially the woman at the end of the line, she's going to be sitting there with the dough in her hand. Obviously, it's stationary, right? There's no manipulation of the dough. It's going to turn to chametz. So basically, what the Chachamim say is, have everybody participate in a station. In the Gemara, we're going to be more detailed regarding exactly how these stations work, but anyway, everybody should be working at the same time, just in a kind of like a conveyor belt situation. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo kol anashim, lo kol ha'etzim, lo kol ha'tanurim shavim, zaklal, tipach tiltosh bitzonin. So Rabbi Kiva says, look, you can't standardize this discussion, right? I'll say under my breath, even though we have standardized the whole matzah baking process, but Rabbi Kiva says you can't standardize it. So the not all the woods are the same, not all the ovens are the same. Look, if you see the dough start to inflate, so throw some cold water on it, literally. Throw some cold water on it, so that will slow down the whole chametz process, and that's fine. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara has a couple of braces that are just going to augment what we learned in the Mishnah. So Lasha hi mekatefes bechaver to Lasha tachteha. So the Gemara, the Bryce over here is just going to be now describing in slightly more detail this picture that the Chachamim are painting, that every woman's going to have a workstation, and then basically what we're going to do is we're going to rotate so that the dough is always going to be manipulated. So la shehi mekatefes v'chaver to la shetachteha. So the woman at the kneading station, so then she's going to move to the kituv station, the shaping of the dough, the basting of the dough. Right? Again, the way we make our matzahs, it's hard for us to envision like what the Gemara is describing over here in terms of braiding and basting. Anyway, v'chaverta l'ashatachta mekatefes hi'ofa v'chaverta mekatefes. And now we're talking about a third station over here, where one group is going to be baking, the other one's going to be doing the braiding and the basting. Tachta v'ashlishis lasha. And now with the woman in station number three is going to go back to station number one in terms of kneading. And just basically now all three women are just going to keep moving and circulating in this on these three stations so that the dough is going to be manipulated all the time. Remember, we said this, and here the Gemara says it beferish. Kolzman shosekes babatzeg eno bali dechimus. As long as there's manipulation of the dough is never going to become chametz. Again, we made this point already. I'll reiterate. It's not our practice. Our practice is that the moment the water comes into contact with the flour, we're on the clock, 18 minutes. And then any dough that makes it into the oven and baked at that point in time, by the way, the baking of the dough, right. I did matzah baking. The baking of the matzah is about 4 to 5 seconds in the oven, right? So our 18 minutes starts from the moment the water and flour make contact. Meaning, even though, according to the strict letter of the law, as we just saw in the Gemara, as long as the dough is being manipulated, there is no time frame. There's no time limit. But okay, we're machmer. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Kiva Amar Lokol Anashim Tanya. I'm Rabbi Kiva Danti Lifnei Remin Gamliel. So here again, a brisa that just simply expanding a little bit more what we saw in the Mishnah. So I judged him from Remin Gamliel. Yalam Din Rabbeinu Benashim Zrizos or Benashim Shein Zrizos. Meaning, again, we're trying to standardize. Right? What should be the practice of the women when baking the matzah? So, could you describe the women? Right? The hard workers are not such hard workers. Be'etzem lachem o be'etzem levashim. The wood, is it dry and produces a tremendous amount of heat? Or are they moist and not so good? Betanur chama betanur tzonin. What's the temperature of the oven? So, amr li ein lecha ela mashashanu chachamim ze'aklal tipech tiltosh betzonin. So, Rami Gamliel didn't want to have much of a discussion regarding this. Rami Gamliel says, look, it's really simple. You see the dough start to inflate, throw some cold water on it, that'll retard the chametz process, we're good. And Rami Gamliel did not want to entertain any of these variables. Mishnah, last topic of discussion. Now, admittedly, this last topic over here is short, but admittedly it's complicated. And again, we have, this is all academic to me, because never had this experience where the dough starts to turning into chametz. So we already had this discussion going back earlier in this parak regarding the topic of seor. Now, just as a brief introduction, This takes us all the way back to Daf Mem Gimel. That's some time ago. It's about a week ago. Anyway, the Gemara over there, as is the Mishnah over here, going to be discussing Seor, not to be confused with Seor. Seor is a leavening agent. It's sourdough. And you take the seor and you put it into the dough, and it's going to and it's going to create fermentation. That's not what we're talking about. Right now we're talking about Seor. Seor is this middle stage as the dough is a non-chametz entity and now becoming a chametz entity. So it's a development. It's a transition. And this transitional stage is called Seor. So what we're looking at right now is a machlokas tanaim of when this transitional stage is. When you're eating dough in this transitional stage, it's not chametz gamor, so you're not going to be chayev kares, but it's aser. You're not allowed to eat it. When exactly is dough in this seor's transitional stage? That's our Mishnah. Let's see the Mishnah inside. Seor yisarev. So the first thing the Mishnah tells us is that in this transitional stage, so here's what you're going to do. You're going to burn it. V'ha ochlo pater. And if you eat it, you're going to be exempt. Siduk yisarev. Now, if it's beyond the transitional stage where you start seeing cracks develop in the dough because of its expansion, so now it's chametz gamur. So you got to burn it. V'ochlo chayev kares. Now, if you eat it, you're chayev kares. So basically, while it's in the stage of seor, so you're not allowed to eat it. It is chametz, but it's not chametz gamur. Not eligible for kares. Once it becomes chametz gamur, now according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, when cracks start developing, that's the sedakim. So then it's chametz gamur, and you're going to be subject to kares. Ezu seor kekarnei chagavim. Seor is when karnei chagavim. That means that you have cracks, like looking like the legs of grasshoppers. Siduk shinit arvu sedakim zemezed divrei Rabbi Yehuda. And now siduk is where the cracks now actually connect one with the other. That's when it's chametz gamur. So that is Rabbi Yehuda's version of when the seer position starts and when the chametz gamur condition is gonna finish. V'chachamim amar minah, the chachamim say zevezeh ochlo chayev kares. Now the chachamim say, look, we agree that there is a transitional stage, but you got it wrong. It's not when the cracks start developing. When the cracks start developing, you're chametz gamur at that point in time and subject to the kares penalty. It's when the complexion of the dough starts paling. Don't ask me, I don't know. But when it starts paling, so that's when you are in this midpoint, this transition of seor. Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Ezu seor kol she'echsifu panav ka'adam she'amdu sarasav. So when is seor? When it starts paling. When it starts blanching. Sido kekarnei chagavim, divrei Rabbi Meir. And when cracks start forming, so that is at that point in time, now it's chametz gamur. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Now, when you compare what we just learned in the Braisa to the Mishnah, you realize that Rabbi Meir of this Braisa is the chachamim of our Mishnah. Okay, good. V'chachamim amar meizu seor kekarnei chagavim siduk shinit arvu sedakim ze bazeh. Now, the opinion of the chachamim, and again, you compare this with our Mishnah, you realize the chachamim of this Braisa is Rabbi Yehuda. Good. So so what is seor? When it starts cracking. When is it chametz gamur? When the cracks meet one with the other. So v'zeh v'zeh ochlo chayev kares. Now, if you eat it, you're chayev kares. Now, v'anan tanan seor yisarev v'ochlo pater, div Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the Gemara says, I'm confused. Didn't our Mishnah tell us that in this transitional stage, so you're not allowed to eat it, but it's not chametz gamur? And now the Braisa is telling me it's chametz gamur? So, ema li Rabbi Meir, zeh v'zeh ochlo chayev kares. So the Gemara says, yeah. So as far as correction is concerned, as far as Shitas Rav Meir is concerned, zeh v'zeh ochlo chayev kares. Yeah, he believes that when the cracks start, it's chametz gamur. Amar Rava, my time of the Rabbi Meir, ain lecha kol stak v'stak milamala she'ain lecha kama stakin milamata. And as far as a better understanding of Rav Meir, when you start to see the cracks forming externally, that means there's a whole bunch of cracks underneath the surface. And that means to say that according to Rav Meir, it's not the beginnings of chametz. We are now at full-blown chametz. It's chametz gamur. Eligible for the kares penalty, even at that point in time. Okay. Stop over here. Tomorrow we start with the new Mishnah. Let's review. Right? A lot of daf today. Okay, we started off with the question of Abai that he posed against Rabba. Rabba subscribes to Hoel in yesterday's daf and the day before. And a number of questions that were posed against Rabba. Abai asked a question on Rabba directly to Rabba. And the Gemara defends Rabba. It was a long defense. It took well into today's daf in order to defend Rabba. Good. The big question of Rabban and Rav Chisda, their machlokas. Is it the same machlokas as Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua? And to that, the Gemara says, maybe. Various opinions amongst the Amoraim whether the two are tied together. Who does Allah follow like? Rabbi says Allah follows like Rabbi Eliezer. Is that the Psak Allah? Tosha says, I don't know, because it also is a machlokas between Rabban and Rav Chisda as well. So even the conclusion is complicated. How much dough should you be working with on Pesach in order to make sure that it doesn't become chametz? And the answer is, it's got to be a manageable amount. And various opinions amongst the Amoraim, how much is a manageable amount? At the same time, you also want to make sure that the amount of dough that you use is also going to be requiring the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. And we spent a little bit of time this morning talking about the idea that even after the bread's been baked and you weren't mafrish challah, which you should have been, but you weren't mafrish challah, you could put it in a basket and the basket's going to be mitzaref, good. And a couple of details regarding tziruf. Then we did the Mishnah regarding the women baking the matzahs on Pesach and to make sure that there is constant manipulation of the dough in order to make sure that it doesn't rise. And then there is the maneuver of Rabbi Gamliel, which is to just simply throw some cold water on the dough in order to make sure that the fermentation process does not accelerate. And then our last topic of today was siur, the transitional stage when you start with a non-chametz entity and it becomes chametz and it transitions in the middle. So there, during that transitional stage, it is chametz but not chametz gamur. You eat it, you're violating the Torah, but you're not going to be subject to kares. So when is that transitional period? It's a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And in terms of organizing the two positions, so Rabbi Meir has the seer stage starting already at the blanching of the dough. Already at that point in time, it's seer. And when the cracks start forming, according to Rabbi Meir, it's chum, it's gamor. According to Rabbi Yehuda, no. In the blanching of the dough, it's still a non-chametz entity, totally allowed to eat on Pesach. It's only when cracks start forming, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's in this transitional stage, of seer state, and then when the cracks connect one with the other, that's when it is chametz gamor. Okay, adkan.